So we'll give Dr. Burns a few more minutes, and while we're waiting, I'll go ahead and do a little introduction for us. And good evening, everyone. My name is Hannah Rice. I'm one of the vice chairs of our partnerships committee for the American Physician Scientists Association. We're hosting this session tonight entitled Physician Scientists Training Programs in Residency. Glad to see you all here tonight. Do I see Dr. Burns? Maybe. All right. As you've probably noticed, a notification popped up on your screen, or should have popped up on your screen, that we're recording tonight. Just want to make sure everyone's aware. We're going to take clips of the session with approval from our guests and put them into some resource pages for our members so that people with these same questions can look back later and kind of use clips from our session to answer their questions. And just as a side note, we will also have an online forum that will go live after this session for any further questions, further discussion of things that we've talked about, and so forth. If you're interested, we'll share the link with that for that, and you can look it up.
Hi, Hannah. Dr. Burns, how
hi.
Are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm sorry. I could hear you from my computer, but you could not hear me. So thank you for providing the alternative to just call in.
No problem. We're glad to see you tonight or hear you tonight.
Glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So to start, I think let's just let our two guests introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their background and their path to becoming a physician scientist.
So I can go first. So my name is Rob Baiocchi. I am from The Ohio State University, where I direct the Physician Scientist Training Program, also one of our program directors for our internal medicine residency. I'm an associate professor in hematology. My brief background is that I first went to graduate school for a PhD. Later, after postdocs, I decided to go to medical school, focused on tumor immunology, and became the first person at Ohio State to do a ABIM research pathway. And just 8 years ago, was asked to develop a formal program. We're now in our seventh year and growing, and it's been a lot of fun. And I appreciate the chance to come tonight and hopefully provide some good information for everybody.
Hello, everyone. Audrea Burns. I am faculty at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And yes, we are moving strong post-Hurricane Harvey, which is fantastic. I completed graduate school at the University of Chicago, so a Midwesterner, and actually moved to Houston for a unique postdoctoral fellowship program at Baylor College of Medicine that integrated educational kind of development along with administrative and research training, which is called the IRACTA program. And I trained as a classic immunologist at the University of Chicago and continued in immunology, specifically tumor immunology, during my postdoctoral fellowship. I am a classic PhD and do not have an MD. I transitioned through some administrative roles with spearheading a new center for inflammation and epigenetics at the Methodist Hospital Research Institute, and specifically made my way back to Baylor to open up a new center for human immunobiology with Jordan Orange, and quickly found that there was such a need for developing educational programs at Baylor, and serve currently as the associate program director for an undergraduate research program in conjunction with being adjunct faculty at Rice University, and also as started within the past 3 years specifically a track for pediatrician scientists at Baylor called the Pediatrician Scientist Training and Development Program, which I currently serve as the associate program director, and we are now about to enter into our fourth year.
That's some pretty exciting stuff. I'm excited to hear more from you guys about the topic that directly will affect me. So I'm happy to be here for my own edification as well as to host it for APSA. So just a note to all of our attendees, please submit questions via the chat application in GoToMeeting to the APSA organizer account, and I will direct your questions to our guests. And I haven't gotten any questions yet, so let's start by just explaining what exactly is a physician scientist training program in residency, and what is the timeline like? Is it longer, like the undergraduate medical training is longer, or what's that timeline like?
So I could start. A physician scientist training program, or PSTP, at least a traditional type, is meant to facilitate the combined training, clinical and scientific training, and meant to streamline it in a mentorship-heavy fashion to really optimize the success of individuals interested in academic medicine. There are several models that are out there, but at least I can speak for internal medicine. The model that has traditionally been followed at most of the programs is a condensed internal medicine training of 2 years rather than the categorical training of 3 years, or categorical or standard internal medicine residency training. So you shave a year off of internal medicine, and then in the third year of the program, you dive right into a fellowship. Most of the residency programs, when they interview candidates and accept them, or the candidates match, they're automatically accepted into the residency and their fellowship of choice. So it's kind of a heavy upfront clinical experience where you're doing a lot of fulfilling all the ACGME requirements for PGY years 1, 2, and 3 while completing your subspecialty clinical training as well. Now, one of the problems encountered in our training as physician scientists, especially during the MSTP, is that during your research years, you're starved for clinical input, and there's kind of a clinical gap. In the PSTP years, during those years 1 through 3, there's a science gap, and most of the training programs actually focus on closing that science gap by providing targeted mentorship committees and intellectual engagement in the science with any number of programs that the candidate eventually will gravitate toward. The general layout of the program after you finish your clinical training is to segue into a laboratory phase, which is anywhere from 2 to 3 years. Most individuals complete their residency, fellowship, and research training, depending upon the subspecialty they choose, anywhere from 5 to 7 years. Some individuals who choose cardiology, who would like to get to, do echo and say EP, will sometimes move out to 7 to 8 years. So really the primary focus is to really provide optimal support for career development in the form of mentorship, funding, and support in the lab as we segue these people or transition them into junior faculty positions, either at the home institution or elsewhere.
And I could chime in for pediatrics. There are two classical pathways, the integrated research pathway, which truncates the clinical experience during residency from 3 years into 2 years with up to 1 year of research, and then also the accelerated research pathway. And I'm going to focus on the first one, the integrated research pathway, because the accelerated research pathway is very similar to what was just described for internal medicine. The internal research pathway, the integrated research pathway allows for the first 2 years of clinical core rotations and electives to be completed, and then to segue into research. And that overall structure really varies by physician scientist tracked at each institution, where that 1 year of research can either be placed in as early as year two or completely in year three. So for example, at Baylor College of Medicine, physician scientist residents complete one block of research in year two, and then the remaining blocks of research in year three. But again, that diagram of how the research is integrated into the clinic can really vary per institution. But the goal being that you do not take such a complete absence from research until fellowship. So those residents who are really excited by the possibility to have the ability to intermingle clinical experiences with also research experiences usually lean more towards the integrated research pathway. And those residents, particularly those who are interested in a very clinically demanding subspecialty interest, such as cardiology, will focus more towards the accelerated research pathway, where they can enter into fellowship early and then continue research after 1 year of clinic during fellowship. With both the integrated research pathway and the accelerated research pathway, the overall timeline is very similar to what was described, plus or minus a year, but really it doesn't add an additional year by doing the integrated research pathway, even though the entire time of residency is still 3 years, because that may be 1 year less of research during fellowship. Namely, for both the integrated research pathway and accelerated research pathway, there is a commitment at the time of interview for fellowship as well. It's not a formal commitment, but it is more of an acceptance for the integrated research pathway that this is an applicant that is interested in this particular subspecialty field, and we're looking forward to supporting that applicant. And then very similar to internal medicine, for the accelerated research pathway, there is an agreement so that you would have to be formally accepted to the fellowship at the time of committing to the residency program.
Great. So we've inspired a couple of questions here. The first one is the PSTP geared towards current MD PhD students or towards MD only or both?
Well, I can comment on, I think most programs don't target just an MD PhD or an MD, what we're really, I think, looking for in general are physicians who are science-minded, clearly committed to a pathway in academics, and have displayed really strong research skills and a background that illustrates that they're really, you know, cruising down this pathway in an all-out fashion. Everyone in our program happens to be an MD PhD. We have two people entering the program this year as PGY1s that are both MDs, but their backgrounds are really strong. Have a really strong science background, so there's no bias. Our program at OSU actually, so we'll have a main pathway where we have people come in as PSTP when they match, but then people can segue in as PGY1s. And we also support the research of current categorical residents who are in the traditional pathway to engage in research take advantage of the mentorship infrastructure we have in place. So I do believe that most pathways are open to accepting both MDs and combined MD-PhDs.
Absolutely. I would completely agree with that statement. We interview all sorts of applicants and really just looking for authentic research experiences. Again, for our program, it just so happens that all of our residents, and we just now have a full complement, are MD-PhDs, but we have interviewed outstanding applicants that do not have a PhD, and we continue to support that, as well as we're excited about moving into a new recruitment season. Most importantly, we're looking for individuals who are very passionate about a career in academic pediatrics and who have a very strong commitment to scientific research, and that can look like a variety of flavors. It could be behavioral research, it could be purely translational, it could be, you know, classic basic science, but just really, you know, have demonstrated that they're committed to research by pursuing kind of longitudinal experiences, and that they're committed to this pathway.
Stemming off of that, a question that has been asked is, what are you looking for in MD-PhD applicants? Publications, board scores, potential research mentor matching, and I would add to that any other differences in the application process for these kind of residencies versus regular residencies?
Well, I can start. I think... that the most important, so every residency program has their typical way of screening applicants and ranking applicants. This is a much more complex system for the PSTP program, you know, system of ranking applicants, primarily because there are your traditional applicants, but there are also many non-traditional applicants that you can tell just are totally bought into the idea of a career in academic medicine. And sure, we look at all the metrics. We look at the board scores and how people did in their clerkship and their medical school training. I tend to really look at their depth in scientific training and whether they're developing a kind of a thematic area in their research. I have a low threshold of inviting people for interviews, because I think the most important part of really getting excited about an applicant is meeting them and understanding gaining an understanding of their true enthusiasm for both taking care of people and being innovative and coming up with better ways of taking care of people. So I would say that you know, for our program, I don't have a cutoff for board scores. I don't have a cutoff for any grades in med school or publications. But I look for evidence that applicants are committed. And most MSTP and MD PhDs have obviously invested a long time in training. But there are clear signals when you see multiple first author papers, you see letters that are just glaring about how this person is rip-roaring and ready to go on a career in academics, you know, great personal statements that are really convincing. I'd have to say that it's much more open and plastic in terms of choosing candidates than the categorical ranking. But the other thing is that almost always when I do my rank list and I merge it with the categorical, they're always the top 10 anyway. You guys have a phenotype that, I mean, you're the best of the best. And this is just the nature of the people applying for these programs. So anyway, that's sorry, it's not a clear cut answer, but it's the best I can provide.
I thought that was a really beautiful description, because it is such a complex process, and we have well over 1,000 applications that come through the categorical program, significantly fewer for the physician scientist track, and so we do not have to be as stringent, and we don't have a particular metric. We do, you know, look out for red flags, such as, you know, if any, you know, very concerning statements are expressed in recommendation letters, or if there were, you know, pronounced interruptions in training, those sorts of things, if there were any boards that were failed. But we do not have defined cutoffs for grades and GPAs and board scores. We really read every single component of each application. We go through a very painstaking process that it actually doesn't feel painful at all. So that's kind of an incorrect term, but we just really comb over to find out each person's scientific narrative and you know, really get a good sense of who each person is, and, you know, combining, you know, looking at the types of research experiences that they've had, along with who they are, or as they describe their journey through their personal statements. You know, we try to invite as many applicants as we can, because that was, you know, so well said. You just really get to know everyone and who they are and why they chose this journey through meeting them in person. And, you know, ultimately, our mission is to improve child health, and Baylor has a really strong emphasis on cultural diversity, and just as reflective of the population of Houston and wanting our providers to look at such. And so we are excited to meet everyone, you know, from every country, from all states. And so this is one of the most exciting times of the year. The biggest piece of advice that I would give is to just make sure you triple check ERIS. We've had years in which, you know, amazing applicants thought that their personal statements were uploaded and they accidentally weren't, or they were missing recommendation letters, you know, just all these sorts of things that, you guys know so very well at this point in training, but again, it just, because this process moves so quickly, it's just always reassuring to know that everything is correct and to just really be very thoughtful in the statements. We're always looking to see if people are really focused on stating what their career goal is and to see if that has been reflected through their experiences through their application.
You know, just to add one additional thing to what Dr. Brown had mentioned is in the Rachel's comment or question about mentor matching, if there's potential research mentor matching. I mean, this is one of the things we really think hard about when we're looking at MSTP applicants. You know, what's their fit and who do we have for them? And that's another element that we put an awful lot of thought into. And you know, people, you know, like Dr. Brown and myself are very well connected to our scientific community, and we kind of have a pulse on everything that people are doing. So when we see applicants that fit nicely into a group of scientists or physician scientists, it's really a great opportunity for us to communicate that fit. So yes, there is an important part of matching people is research mentor matching, whether there's a great fit or not. So when you look at programs, and that kind of goes back to one of the questions about whether, how do you find out what programs, go to the APSA website and then go to the individual web pages and see which programs have people engaged in your kind of research and really aggressively target them and engage people, directors, faculty, even by email. It's really appreciated. So that's the other thing, that's the other way we look for people is who's approaching us and who's really expressing interest too.
That's a very great point, and I just want to add on to that. We have supplemental forms that we send out to everyone that we invite for an interview. And it's really to do that, to make sure that we know a little bit more about what you're looking for in terms of your scientific research interests and faculty at Baylor and Texas Children's who may be of interest. And undoubtedly, on match day, I could go back and look for at the thoughtfulness of completion of those forms and also the thematic focus and being, you know, our top ranked applicants. And so, again, if you could just make sure that you really put that level of effort into every institution that you will interview at and thinking of who would you like to work for and just spending time thinking about what are those areas of research that really excite you and being very forthright about that. We've had amazing applicants who know exactly what they want to do and others who are still trying to solidify that. And it's just being very forthright and very thoughtful about where you are in terms of that process that really comes across in a very positive light.
Great. We've got a couple more application type questions here. I promise you guys I'm going to get back to these other questions. I just want to make sure we cover all of the different aspects of the application process before we move on. So someone asked, can someone apply to the research as well as the categorical track at the same institution?
So the way we do it at OSU is we have two numbers where you can include in your match, and both are considered in parallel. On your research, so if you just apply to the PSTP and click that box or add that number, that's all you're going to be considered for. If you want to be considered for both categorical and PSTP, then there's a way to do that. Most of the programs have that option for the match. So Yeah.
We're the same way. We have a separate NRMP number for categorical and for the physician scientist track. Usually, I would say about 95% of applicants will check both. And we invite all of the applicants that apply for the physician scientist track for a categorical interview so that both are done at the same time, kind of one swoop, one interview visit. But if you do not want to match into categorical at all, we do have a few students each year who just want to be considered for the physician scientist track, but then you will not be considered for categorical.
So you mentioned before the importance of the personal statements and being very open and complete when writing those. Should we be developing separate personal statements focusing on our scientific narrative for applying to a PSCP versus statements for a categorical residency?
As someone who's been on the admissions for categorical and for PSTP, I think the most important element to communicate for applicants is who they are. And if they're sold out to academics and science and patient care and combining all the above, that should be communicated equally in their personal statement. And I don't think that there's even an ability to submit separate personal statements. It's most important that at this stage of the game that you're really bearing your soul and telling people who you are, what you want, kind of driving a stake in the ground to say that this is my path. I'm going to do this, and communicating it really well and strongly in your personal statement. Even if someone with a strong sense and commitment to physician-scientist pathway does not match in a PSTP and goes to a categorical pathway, keep in mind that many of our best physician-scientists have gone that traditional route. Many of our best physician-scientists don't have a PhD. They have an MD. It's all about who you are, and that's what needs to come through in the personal statement more than anything.
Absolutely. I completely agree with Dr. Baiocchi. You know, it's we can't express how critical it is to just have a very well thought and developed personal statement. It doesn't need to be separate. And I would piggyback on something that he mentioned earlier. You know, when our top applicants are always unanimously the same top applicants for categorical. So it's not looking for distinct people, because a great physician scientist is a great clinician. They have a passion for improving health, whether it's for child or adult. They're also equally as passionate about their science. And so, our categorical program director oftentimes will say, I would be so delighted to have this applicant, you know, if they don't want to go into the physician scientist track, I would be so happy to have them as the applicant. And that's really ideally who the best applicant is. It's one that would fit in both for categorical and for the physician scientist pathway, because you're integrated into both realms. You're still very much a part of categorical in terms of your clinical experiences and your classmates. And so we want there to be a kind of a seamless integration for both, and that you really would be a great fit for both programs. And so that being said, it's really just about communicating who you are. And I know Dr. Baiocchi just said this very beautifully, but it's
it's taking time to tell your story and how you got there and what moves you and what excites you. And those statements that just really do that very well are those that are so memorable, and you just become so excited to meet that person. And, you know, it's just our first introduction to you. And so allowing us to see why you have chosen this pathway and how your science is driven by your clerkship experiences and vice versa, you know, how those intertwine in your life is just so important. And that's what we're really, really excited about reading.
So here's a pretty introductory question for us. It's one that I have had myself. What is the easiest way to find out if a program has a research-based residency track or a PSTP? Is there a comprehensive list of programs somewhere that we can reference?
Well, I think the best place is the APSA website, where we're all told to enter our information and list our web pages. You know, until this year, until we had a combined meeting with all of the program, or at least the interested program directors, with the Alliance of Academic Internal Medicine, there hasn't been a centralized organization that has promoted the PSTP training pathway. I do believe that that's changing now, and I think we have sufficient momentum with getting together every year. We're going into our second year where we're going to all meet for a third time now. I hope that, I mean, one of our objectives was to develop a centralized web page either through, well, APSA certainly, but also through AAIM. The other great thing to do, since most of you are probably in an MSTP, is to go to the annual APSA meeting. This is APSA, American Society of Clinical Investigation, and AAP meeting, where you have budding physician scientists, young physician scientists, and older physician scientists all collected in one place at the Fairmont Hotel in Chicago. And it's an awesome meeting. But one of the nice features of it, especially for your group, is the research residency lunch, where about 15, maybe more, programs have a representative there present. And you get to talk face to face with each program director, and even some, we bring trainees with us. And it's a great way to learn about the programs that are interested in reaching out to the trainees. And, but as far as I know, those are really the few areas that are centralized and available to identify these programs.
And that's all the resources I know about as well, is to spend time on the APSA website. And again, echoing, the meeting is phenomenal. You know, the poster session is so concentrated with just leading physician scientists from the international and national community who are all very excited and willing to hear about you and your science. It's a great way to meet many program directors and to find out about updates in their programs, and so you could continue that discussion throughout the meeting, and to have the residency luncheon serve as a capstone event. Oftentimes, I have had the privilege of going the past 2 years, and it's been such a delight, because usually once you arrive at the luncheon, it's, you know, now friendly faces that you've seen through the meeting at the poster sessions and so forth. So I would highly encourage for all of you guys to go there and speaking to some of our residents about how they started to become engaged with other physician scientists. They all unanimously echoed that it was through this meeting. So this is a tremendous resource annually.
So here's a question from Robert. Is PSTP appropriate for those who want to research in residency but are unsure of a specific subspecialty or fellowship?
Well, I think that having, it's always nice to see people coming in with an area of interest or an area of focus, but we all know that during year one and even year two of residency, we can encounter a clinical situation where we see how our research will really contribute in a significant way. And I think that there is a good degree of plasticity built into the programs. Now, the way we do it at OSU, when people come in with a idea that they want to go to a specific fellowship, we always have them interview with both our residency and our fellowship program, and then make a decision. And if they match, they're automatically accepted to that fellowship spot. Now, there's obviously 2 years in the mean, in the waiting before fellowship begins. And if someone decides to change track, I would have to be supportive of that. This is training. This is about harnessing the most important qualities a physician scientist has to get them to make their biggest impact. So from my perspective, when people come in uncommitted even, it's our job to help them become committed to one subspecialty or not, to stay as a general internal medicine doc and have a scientific focus. But we all know where research leads us, down many paths often, and we often gravitate toward an area that we don't expect. So we shouldn't be surprised when it happens at the level of training. I hope that helps.
We have had a number of residents, at least one per year, who is not completely decided. They may are going back and forth between two different subspecialty interests or maybe even a couple. But we are supportive, as long as they are committed to a career in academic pediatrics, and we help, we work with Categorical to really adjust their clinical experiences very early on to help them decide what it is that they would like to do. And that has worked out really beautifully. We've had people, now this is a little bit different because most of our residents are in the integrated research pathway. We just started accepting residents in the accelerated research pathway, which is where the fellowship program commits at the very beginning. So we don't have, I can't speak to that as thoroughly, but in the integrated research pathway, you have up until the ninth month of the first year before you commit to that pathway. So there is a bit of flexibility within the first year to really decide clinically what it is that you would like to do. And almost in every case, by the end of that first year, those who were not crystal clear after having those clinical experiences really kind of know and say, Dr. Burns, these are the types of patients that really kind of align with my research questions, and I really do feel as though I can make an impact here, or I would like to open up a specialty clinic around this disease area. And so then it just automatically clicks. But we're very supportive, and I would argue that in going to the American Pediatric Program Directors meetings and talking to many program directors at physician scientist tracks across the country, There is generally a sense of support for helping you to find that road. It's always easier to have a clear sense of what you want to do, or even if you're deciding between two areas, it gets a little bit more difficult when you are completely undecided. But again, there's this sense of commitment to helping you kind of find your niche.
And are all fellowships open to these tracks, or only a few?
I think that's variable from institution to institution. I know the larger programs like Vanderbilt and WashU, Iowa, Chicago, have been established for a long time and are open to all subspecialties. At Ohio State, all subspecialties are open as well. We're a lot younger a program, but there are some programs where there's only a couple of divisions that or fellowships that are engaged. That said, internal medicine is obviously, you're hearing from both Dr. Burns and myself about internal medicine, being both in peds and medicine. The PSTP tracks being available in peds and medicine. It's also open in pathology and surgery in some institutions. So if there's one thing that's clear is that there's quite a spectrum of training opportunities. This will hopefully get a lot clearer when we can consolidate all this information in a central area to really help people in your position to find their way toward the ideal program for them.
Absolutely. I would just echo that. Again, it's something that you'll get a really good sense of once you hit the interview trail, because it varies from institution to institution. Some divisions are in the process of expanding or changing leadership or contracting, and so that may change the ability of whether they're able to accept so many students. So it just really depends. At Baylor, we are open to all subspecialty areas, with, of course, there being some divisions that are larger and maybe willing to support more future fellows than others. But, each year we've seen a complete diversity in physician scientists aligned residents who are interested in everything from neonatology to GI to hem-onc, and we're supportive. And so are the section chiefs and fellowship directors of all of those divisions.
So I've gotten another question about the timeline of the training programs. This guest lists a link and says that this page seems to suggest that doing a research pathway would not get us to fellowship sooner. Is the primary advantage of the research pathway over a categorical program the additional year of protected research time?
So that's a really great question. And it hits on a couple of important points. The first point is that at least if it's an internal medicine pathway that the applicant is pursuing, the American Board of Internal Medicine research pathway does indeed get you into a fellowship faster. And the way I like to look at this, people call it the short track. It's not a short track. It's a short track only not in the sense of time. It's a short track in that it gets you where you want to be sooner. That's combining your clinical with your research training, where you're narrowing your focus and developing your clinical and scientific niche and your laboratory program. This PSTP is just not meant to compartmentalize our skill sets. It's meant to integrate them and make them come together, because that's what you're going to be doing for the rest of your career. So first of all, so yes, you get to your area of specialty faster. Why is this important? Well, most people I encounter who are science minded or want to integrate their science with their medicine, they can get a lot out of their first 2 years of internal medicine, jump right into their subspecialty fellowship training. Also, importantly, it's all internal medicine, but with a subspecialty focus. So they're getting three condensed and very intense years of internal medicine with subspecialty clinical training. That third year of internal medicine categorical training for people who really want to be physician scientists is often outpatient time. It's often focused in a primary care type of direction. And it's, in my opinion, not ideal for somebody who needs to really understand what it's like to train combine their clinical and scientific training. So that's the first part. The second part is that the PSTP pathway does not just integrate 1 year of protected time. You know, once you finish your clinical training in a subspecialty fellowship, you have 2 years of protected time where you still practice a half day clinic every week. And you're combining this training. So it's at least 2 years. Some people do 3 years training based on their transition time from fellowship to junior faculty status. So the other important element here is that this extended combined training is also really guided by intense mentorship. So the PSTP is a very, very distinct pathway from a categorical resident who just goes through then fellowship, does a year of research, and looks for a job. Two completely different experiences. And I would argue that the outcomes, that the PSTP pathway is the best way to train. The outcomes of PSTP trainees going in and succeeding in academic medicine, that is opening an independent laboratory, obtaining sustained independent research is in the 90% range, and that far exceeds any pathway for training opportunities for people like us.
And just to add to that, I would completely agree that it is a completely different experience from the categorical pathway. One thing that we haven't really mentioned is all of the built-in curriculum and didactic that's integrated into the pathway. So it's not just completing, a protected research experience. It's that, but starting in the first year for both our integrated research pathway and accelerated research pathway residents, they have protected time from clinical rotations to complete scholarship activities that are tailored to each year of the program. And it really focuses on physician scientist identity formation. That begins from the time that you match. We pair with a slew of mentors, and many programs have, some variety of mentorship and didactic instruction. And so we host over, 75 unique seminars throughout all 3 years, specifically for our physician scientist residents, so that they finish residency with first author publications, that they have a huge career building skill set in which they are ready to hit the ground running in fellowship, to apply for grants and K awards, and to be competitive for our funding. And so the training is completely night and day. There is an enormous amount of effort put into making sure that those residents can be successful in academics. The amount of programming varies as the curriculum is different from each institution, and you'll get a feel for that during the interviews, but many of these programs are spearheaded by very seasoned physician scientists, investigators such as Dr. Baiocchi, who have been through this experience and really can provide extensive mentorship to all residents as to how it is to have a sustained career during this pathway. And so you don't want to miss out on those opportunities for mentorship and didactic by just going to categorical if that's not what you want to do. For Baylor College of Medicine, roughly half of our residents are primary care aligned. And so there are scholarship opportunities through categorical, but it's very different from those of physician scientist track. It's really poised for those who may go into primary care or who are interested in QI. And so it's really a very a much broader definition of scholarship, and it's also just a 4-week research experience, so much less intense and not focused for a career in academic pediatrics as well.
All right, I've got one final question, and then I'll ask for some wrap-up comments from both of our guests. After completing PSCP, including a fellowship, do most trainees transition into internship right away, or do some sort of additional postdoctoral training to transition into assistant professorship?
So it depends on the institution. So many institutions traditionally will transition trainees from fellowship to faculty by having them participate in an instructor period. This instructor position can go anywhere from 1 to 3+ years. Other institutions, OSU, for example, we have been focused really on transitioning our trainees into assistant professor positions. I don't know, you know, I mean, I think the reason for these differences is built on tradition, but also, I think it's a really important question to ask when you're interviewing. You know, what is the likelihood of me transitioning into a faculty position? Now, you know, at Ohio State, when we do transition people into assistant professorships, we do so with packages that are going to maximize their likelihood of becoming completely independent in the next 3 to 4 years. It's important when you are interviewing for these positions to think about, all right, I'd like to train here as a physician scientist, but would I also want to stay on here as a faculty? That's a good question to ask people when you're interviewing. If people tell you, well, yeah, if you want to do 4 years as an instructor, that might tell you a little bit about the program. There are ways of transitioning very effectively from fellowship to assistant professor, and they come in the form of infrastructure such as the CTSAs, the Center for Translational Clinical Research grants that are available at many places. There's a K-12 mechanism that really provides that support. There's a K-99 mechanism that provides advanced trainees a pathway to independence in a 3 to 5 year period of time. And of course, there's the traditional K pathway and other non-NIH pathways. Each of our subspecialties has organizations that provide career development awards. All of these things are resources that your mentorship committee will make or should make available to you and really train you and kind of gear you toward successful applications for these to transition as a full assistant professor. That should be the goal.
I completely agree with Dr. Baiocchi. It's one of those questions that when you have the opportunity to meet with the fellowship directors during the interview trail, you have to ask those questions. And if you could get a feel for what they've offered past trainees, if you have opportunities to meet with some of the fellows in the section or go out to dinner, you will get a really clear sense for what current programmatic grants they have, such as the K-12 and the CTSA, also for what they're able to offer, what they have working. The fellowship director can tell you what's in the pipeline, because it's going to vary substantially from institution to institution and also within each particular division.
The one thing I'd add to that would be, when you're interviewing, I would just flat out ask the program directors, who can I speak with who is here, who's trained in this program? Who can I talk with about, this is an interview for your career. And keep in mind, you're being recruited. You're not coming in asking for a job. You're not asking. People are inviting you because they're interested in you. So you got to be, I think, aggressive in saying, look, I would love to speak to somebody who's gone through this program and get a feel for whether their trajectory, their pathway is in line with your expectations.
Absolutely. And to add to that, oftentimes applicants will do a second visit, and that's really, if you have boiled down your list to a final number of institutions and you really want to see what's the most perfect fit, I would request these sorts of things. A lot of times the program coordinators may ask you if there's anyone, additional that you would like to meet with. If you can ask to speak to fellows or instructors within the fellowship area of interest, if it's possible for you to have lunch or coffee, you could really get a good sense for the current dynamics for that particular fellowship. But again, it's one of those things where you are being recruited, and it shows that you're doing your homework and that you're potentially thinking about wanting to stay for junior faculty. And so that's always a big plus, because everyone would like, ideally, for you to commit long-term so that you can become a part of the academic community there. And so it's always nice when you see a student who is thinking that far down the pathway, which many of you are, because you've already committed to such long periods of training with gaining research experience and those sorts of things.
Great, thank you. Do either of you have any final comments, words of advice, encouragement, anything like that for us?
I think a lot was covered tonight, and I think both Dr. Burns and I think we had a good amount to cover, and I think the one thing I'd like to emphasize is the point that I just made earlier is that your interview is a recruitment. People are looking for you. They want you in their program, and you can't be shy about asking for things that are important to you. We have to keep in mind that our physician scientist workforce is in decline, And I can send a couple links around to a couple great references published over the last couple years in JCI. You guys are incredibly valuable to keeping the physician scientist workforce growing and viable and really driving the development of what we really need in medicine, and that's innovation. So I often see applicants being very timid and not being very forthcoming and stating what's important to them. I would just encourage you to lay it all out and reach out and engage the leaders of these programs, because that's what we love. We love to hear from you, and we love it when people reach out by email, phone, whatever. Just make the most of this time.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It's nothing like, an applicant that has really done their homework in terms of really getting to know what the scientific research community is like at their institution and trying to start thinking about what their pathway and career could look like there. And so I would just, again, say that you guys are so extremely valuable. And across tracks, all of the program directors are excited to potentially meet you and interview you. And so there's a lot of buzz and excitement. And so I would just really put forth your very best effort and communicate exactly what you're looking for. And I wish all of you guys nothing but success, and please feel free to call or email me if you have any additional questions. I'll be happy to take those.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both for being with us tonight. I've got a few final notes to wrap up here. As I mentioned at the beginning of the session, we will have a MedStro forum available for discussion after the session is over. So look up APSA, or the American Physician Scientist Association, on MedStro for further discussion and questions there. Also, just a general plug for APSA membership. As we've mentioned several times throughout the session, we have a lot of great resources for our members, connections with partner organizations, annual meeting where you can meet our great program directors, and different things like that that we can really plug you in and give you a lot of great resources to accelerate your career. So if you're not already a member, please consider it. And we will also have clips from this session up on the website afterwards in case you missed something or wanted to hear something again. Look that up on our resource pages. But thank you for being here tonight, and thank you to Dr. Baiocchi and Dr. Burns for being with us. We really appreciate it. I know I got a lot out of it. I hope you all did as well. And I guess that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Hope to meet you at APSA.
Thank you, everybody.